This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Bared to You, a Crossfire novel by Sylvia Day, performed by Jill Redfield.
This one is for Dr. David Allen Goodwin. My love and gratitude are boundless. Thank you, Dave. You saved my life. Chapter 1. We should head to a bar and celebrate. I wasn't surprised by my roommate's emphatic pronouncement. Carrie Taylor found excuses to celebrate, no matter how small and inconsequential. I'd always considered it part of his charm. I'm sure drinking the night before starting a new job is a bad idea. Come on, Ava! Carrie sat on our new living room floor amid a half-dozen moving boxes and flashed his winning smile. We'd been unpacking for days, yet he still looked amazing. Leanly built, dark-haired, and green-eyed, Carrie was a man who rarely looked anything less than absolutely gorgeous on any day of his life. I might have resented that if he hadn't been the dearest person on earth to me. "I'm not talking about a bender," he insisted. "Just a glass of wine or two. We can hit a happy hour and be in by 8. I don't know if I'll make it back in time." I gestured at my yoga pants and fitted workout tank. "After I time the walk to work, I'm going to hit the gym. Walk fast. Work out faster." Carrie's perfectly executed arched brow made me laugh. I fully expected his million-dollar face to appear on billboards and fashion magazines all over the world one day. No matter his expression, he was a knockout. "How about tomorrow after work?" I offered as a substitute. "If I make it through the day, that'll be worth celebrating." "Deal. I'm breaking in the new kitchen for dinner." Cooking was one of Carrie's joys, but it wasn't one of his talents. "Great." Blowing a wayward strand of hair off his face, he grinned at me. "We've got a kitchen most restaurants would kill for. There's no way to screw up a meal in there." Dubious, I headed out with a wave, choosing to avoid a conversation about cooking. Taking the elevator down to the first floor, I smiled at the doorman when he let me out to the street with a flourish. The moment I stepped outside, the smells and sounds of Manhattan embraced me and invited me to explore. I was not merely across the country from my former home in San Diego, but seemingly worlds away. Two major metropolises, one endlessly temperate and centrally lazy, the other teeming with life and frenetic energy. In my dreams, I'd imagined living in a walk-up in Brooklyn. But, being a dutiful daughter, I found myself on the Upper West Side instead. If not for Carrie living with me, I would have been miserably lonely in the sprawling apartment that cost more per month than most people made in a year. The doorman tipped his hat to me.
"Good evening, Miss Trammell. Will you need a cab this evening?"
"No, thanks, Paul." I rocked onto the rounded heels of my fitness shoes. "I'll be walking." He smiled.
"It's cooled down from this afternoon. Should be nice."
"I've been told I should enjoy the June weather before it gets wicked hot."
"Very good advice, Miss Trammell."
Stepping out from under the modern glass entrance overhang that somehow meshed with the age of the building and its neighbors, I enjoyed the relative quiet of my tree-lined street before I reached the bustle and flow of traffic on Broadway. One day soon, I hoped to blend right in. But for now, I still felt like a fraudulent New Yorker. I had the address and the job, but I was still wary of the subway and had trouble hailing cabs. I tried not to walk around wide-eyed and distracted, but it was hard. There was just so much to see and experience. The sensory input was astonishing. The smell of vehicle exhaust mixed with food from vendor carts, the shouts of hawkers blended with music from street entertainers, the awe-inspiring range of faces and styles and accents, the gorgeous architectural wonders, and the cars. Jesus Christ! The frenetic flow of tightly packed cars was unlike anything I'd ever seen anywhere. There was always an ambulance, patrol car, or a fire engine trying to part the flood of yellow taxis with the electronic wail of ear-splitting sirens. I was in awe of the lumbering garbage trucks that navigated tiny one-way streets and the package delivery drivers who braved the bumper-to-bumper traffic while facing rigid deadlines. Real New Yorkers cruised right through it all, their love for the city as comfortable and familiar as a favorite pair of shoes. They didn't view the steam billowing from potholes and vents in the sidewalks with romantic delight, and they didn't blink an eye when the ground vibrated beneath their feet as the subway roared by below, while I grinned like an idiot and flexed my toes. New York was a brand new love affair for me. I was starry-eyed, and it showed. So I had to really work at playing it cool as I made my way over to the building where I would be working. As far as my job went, at least, I'd gotten my way. I wanted to make a living based on my own merits, and that meant an entry-level position. Starting the next morning, I would be the assistant to Mark Garrity at Watersfield and Lehman, one of the preeminent advertising agencies in the United States. My stepfather, mega-financier Richard Stanton, had been annoyed when I took the job, pointing out that if I'd been less prideful, I could have worked for a friend of his instead, and reaped the benefits of that connection. "You're as stubborn as your father," he'd said. "It'll take him forever to pay off your student loans on a cop salary." That had been a major fight, with my dad unwilling to back down. "Hell, if another man's gonna pay for my daughter's education," Victor Reyes had said when Stanton made the offer. I respected that. I suspected Stanton did too, although he would never admit it. I understood both men's sides, because I'd fought to pay off the loans myself, and lost. It was a point of pride for my father. My mother had refused to marry him, but he'd never wavered from his determination to be my dad in every way possible. Knowing it was pointless to get riled up over old frustrations, I focused on getting to work as quickly as possible. I'd deliberately chosen to clock the short trip during a busy time on a Monday, so I was pleased when I reached the Crossfire building, which housed Watersfield and Lehman, in less than 30 minutes. I tipped my head back and followed the line of the building all the way up to the slender ribbon of sky. The Crossfire was seriously impressive, a sleek spire of gleaming sapphire that pierced the clouds. I knew from my previous interviews that the interior on the other side of the ornate copper-framed revolving doors was just as awe-inspiring, with golden-veined marble floors and walls and brushed aluminum security desk and turnstiles. I pulled my new ID card out of the inner pocket of my pants and held it up for the two guards in black business suits at the desk. They stopped me anyway, no doubt because I was majorly underdressed, but then they cleared me through. After I completed an elevator ride up to the 20th floor, I'd have a general time frame for the whole route from door to door. Score. I was walking toward the bank of elevators when a svelte, beautifully groomed brunette caught her purse on a turnstile and upended it, spilling a deluge of change. Coins rained onto the marble and rolled merrily away, and I watched people dodge the chaos and keep going as if they didn't see it. I winced in sympathy and crouched to help the woman collect her money, as did one of the guards. "Thank you," she said, shooting me a quick, harried smile. I smiled back. "No problem. I've been there." I'd just squatted to reach a nickel lying near the entrance when I ran into a pair of luxurious black Oxfords, draped in tailored black slacks. I waited a beat for the man to move out of my way, and when he didn't, I arched my neck back to allow my line of sight to rise. The custom three-piece suit hit more than a few of my hot buttons, but it was the tall, powerfully lean body inside it that made it sensational. Still, as impressive as all that magnificent maleness was, it wasn't until I reached the man's face that I went down for the count. Wow. Just wow. He sank into an elegant crouch directly in front of me. Hit with all that exquisite masculinity at eye level, I could only stare, stunned. Then something shifted in the air between us. As he stared back, he altered, as if a shield slid away from his eyes, revealing a scorching force of will that sucked the air from my lungs. The intense magnetism he exuded grew in strength, becoming a near tangible impression of vibrant and unrelenting power. Reacting purely on instinct, I shifted backward and sprawled flat on my ass. My elbows throbbed from the violent contact with the marble floor, but I scarcely registered the pain. I was too preoccupied with staring, riveted by the man in front of me. Inky black hair framed a breathtaking face. His bone structure would make a sculptor weep with joy, while a firmly etched mouth, a blade of a nose, and intensely blue eyes made him savagely gorgeous. Those eyes narrowed slightly, his features otherwise schooled into impassivity. His dress shirt and suit were both black, but his tie perfectly matched those brilliant irises. His eyes were shrewd and assessing, and they bored into me. My heartbeat quickened. My lips parted to accommodate faster breaths. He smelled sinfully good. Not cologne. Body wash, maybe. Or shampoo. Whatever it was mouth-watering, as was he. He held out a hand to me, exposing onyx cufflinks and a very expensive-looking watch. With a shaky inhalation, I placed my hand in his. My pulse leaped when his grip tightened. His touch was electric, sending a shock up my arm that raised the hairs on my nape. He didn't move for a moment, a frown line marring the space between arrogantly slashed brows.
"Are you all right?"
His voice was cultured and smooth, with a rasp that made my stomach flutter. It brought sex to mind. Extraordinary sex. I thought for a moment that he might be able to make me orgasm just by talking long enough. My lips were dry, so I licked them before answering. "I'm fine." He stood with economical grace, pulling me up with him. We maintained eye contact because I was unable to look away. He was younger than I'd assumed at first. Younger than 30 would be my guess. But his eyes were much worldlier, hard and sharply intelligent. I felt drawn to him, as if a rope bound my waist and he were slowly, inexorably pulling it. Blinking out of my semi-daze, I released him. He wasn't just beautiful, he was enthralling. He was the kind of guy that made a woman want to rip his shirt open and watch the buttons scatter, along with her inhibitions. I looked at him in his civilized, urbane, outrageously expensive suit and thought of raw, primal, sheet-clawing fucking. He bent down and retrieved the ID card I hadn't realized I'd dropped, freeing me from that provocative gaze. My brain stuttered back into gear. I was irritated with myself for feeling so awkward while he was so completely self-possessed. And why? Because I was dazzled, damn it. He glanced up at me in the pose, him nearly kneeling before me, skewed my equilibrium again. He held my gaze as he rose.
"Are you sure you're all right? You should sit down for a minute."
My face heated. How lovely to appear awkward and clumsy in front of the most self-assured and graceful man I'd ever met. I just lost my balance. I'm okay. Looking away, I caught sight of the woman who'd dumped the contents of her purse. She thanked the guard who'd helped her, then turned to approach me, apologizing profusely. I faced her and held out the handful of coins I'd collected, but her gaze snagged on the god in the suit, and she promptly forgot me altogether. After a beat, I just reached over and dumped the change into the woman's bag. Then I risked a glance at the man again, finding him watching me even as the brunette gushed thank yous. To him. Not to me, of course, the one who'd actually helped. I talked over her, May I have my badge, please? He offered it back to me, although I made an effort to retrieve it without touching him. His fingers brushed mine, sending that charge of awareness into me all over again. Thank you, I muttered, before skirting him and pushing out to the street through the revolving door. I paused on the sidewalk, gulping in a breath of New York air, redolent with a million different things, some good and some toxic. There was a sleek black Bentley SUV in front of the building, and I saw my reflection in the limo's spotless tinted windows. I was flushed, and my gray eyes were overly bright. I'd seen that look on my face before, in the bathroom mirror just before I went to bed with a man. It was my I'm ready to fuck look, and it had absolutely no business being on my face now. Christ, get a grip! 5 minutes with Mr. Dark and Dangerous, and I was filled with an edgy, restless energy. I could still feel the pull of him, the inexplicable urge to go back inside where he was. I could make the argument that I hadn't finished what I'd come to the crossfire to do, but I knew I'd kick myself for it later. How many times was I going to make an ass of myself in one day? Enough, I scolded myself under my breath. Moving on. Horns blared as one cab darted in front of another with only inches to spare, and then slammed on the brakes as daring pedestrians stepped into the intersection seconds before the light changed. Shouting ensued, a barrage of expletives and hand gestures that didn't carry real anger behind them. In seconds, all the parties would forget the exchange, which was just one beat in the natural tempo of the city. As I melded into the flow of foot traffic and set off toward the gym, a smile teased my mouth. Ah, New York, I thought, feeling settled again. You rock. I'd planned on warming up on a treadmill, then capping off the hour with a few of the machines, but when I saw that a beginner's kickboxing class was about to start, I followed the mass of waiting students into that instead. By the time it was over, I felt more like myself. My muscles quivered with the perfect amount of fatigue, and I knew I'd sleep hard when I crashed later. You did really well. I wiped the sweat off my face with a towel and looked at the young man who spoke to me. Lanky and sleekly muscular, he had keen brown eyes and flawless café au lait skin. His lashes were enviably thick and long, while his head was shaved bald. Thank you. My mouth twisted ruefully. Pretty obvious it was my first time, huh? He grinned and held out his hand. Parker Smith.
Ava Trammell.
You have a natural grace, Ava. With a little training, you could be a literal knockout. In a city like New York, knowing self-defense is imperative.
He gestured over to a corkboard hung on the wall. It was covered in thumb-tacked business cards and flyers. Tearing off a flag from the bottom of a fluorescent sheet of paper, he held it out to me.
Ever heard of Krav Maga?
In a Jennifer Lopez movie.
I teach it, and I'd love to teach you. That's my website and the number to the studio.
I admired his approach. It was direct, like his gaze, and his smile was genuine. I'd wondered if he was angling toward a pickup, but he was cool enough about it that I couldn't be sure. Parker crossed his arms, which showed off cut biceps. He wore a black sleeveless shirt and long shorts. His Converse sneakers looked comfortably beat up, and tribal tattoos peeked up from his collar.
My website has the hours. You should come by and watch. See if it's for you.
I'll definitely think about it. Do that. He extended his hand again, and his grip was solid and confident.
I hope to see you.
The apartment smelled fabulous when I got back home, and Adele was crooning soulfully through the surround sound speakers about chasing pavements. I looked across the open floor plan into the kitchen and saw Carrie swaying to the music while stirring something on the range. There was an open bottle of wine on the counter and two goblets, one of which was half filled with red wine.
Hey! I called out as I got closer. What you cookin'? And do I have time for a shower first?
He poured wine into the other goblet and slid it across the breakfast bar to me, his movements practiced and elegant. No one would know from looking at him that he'd spent his childhood bouncing between his drug-addicted mother and foster homes, followed by adolescence in juvenile detention facilities and state-run rehabs. "Pasta with meat sauce. And hold the shower. Dinner's ready. Have fun?" "Once I got to the gym, yeah." I pulled out one of the teak wood bar stools and sat. I told him about the kickboxing class and Parker Smith. "Want to go with me?"
"Krav Maga?"
Carrie shook his head. "That's hardcore. I'll get all bruised up, and that would cost me jobs. But I'll go with you to check it out, just in case this guy's a whack." I watched him dump the pasta into a waiting colander. A whack, huh? My dad had taught me to read guys pretty well, which was how I'd known the god in the suit was trouble. Regular people offered token smiles when they helped someone, just to make a momentary connection that smoothed the way. Then again, I hadn't smiled at him either. "Baby girl," Carrie said, pulling bowls out of the cupboard. "You're a sexy, stunning woman. I question any man who doesn't have the balls to ask you outright for a date." I wrinkled my nose at him. He set a bowl in front of me. It contained tiny tubes of salad noodles covered in a skimpy tomato sauce with lumps of ground beef and peas. "You've got something on your mind. What is it?" I caught the handle of the spoon sticking out of the bowl and decided not to comment on the food. I think I ran into the hottest man on the planet today. Maybe the hottest man in the history of the world.
"Oh? I thought that was me."
"Do tell me more." Carrie stayed on the other side of the counter, preferring to stand and eat. I watched him take a couple bites of his own concoction before I felt brave enough to try it myself. Not much to tell, really. I ended up sprawled on my ass in the lobby of the Crossfire, and he gave me a hand up.
"Tall or short? Blonde or dark? Built or lean? Eye color?"
I washed down my second bite with some wine. "Tall, dark, lean, and built. Blue eyes. Filthy rich, judging by his clothes and accessories. And he was insanely sexy. You know how it is. Some good-looking guys don't make your hormones go crazy, while some unattractive guys have massive sex appeal. This guy had it all." My belly fluttered, as it had when Dark and Dangerous touched me. In my mind, I remembered his breathtaking face with crystal clarity. It should be illegal for a man to be that mind-blowing. I was still recovering from the frying of my brain cells. Carrie set his elbow on the counter and leaned in, his long bangs covering one vibrant green eye.
"So, what happened after he helped you up?"
I shrugged. "Nothing."
"Nothing?"
I left.
"What? You didn't flirt with him?"
I took another bite. Really, the meal wasn't bad, or else I was just starving. "He wasn't the kind of guy you flirt with, Carrie."
"There is no such thing as a guy you can't flirt with. Even the happily married ones enjoy a little harmless flirtation now and then."
"There was nothing harmless about this guy," I said dryly.
"One of those."
Carrie nodded sagely.
"Bad boys can be fun, if you don't get too close."
Of course he would know. Men and women of all ages fell at his feet. Still, he somehow managed to pick the wrong partner every time. He'd dated stalkers and cheaters and lovers who threatened to kill themselves over him, and lovers with significant others they didn't tell him about. Name it, he'd been through it. "I can't see this guy ever being fun," I said. "He was way too intense. Still, I bet he'd be awesome in the sack with all that intensity."
"Now you're talking. Forget the real guy. Just use his face in your fantasies and make him perfect there."
Preferring to get the guy out of my head altogether, I changed the subject. "You have any go-sees tomorrow?"
"Of course."
Carrie launched into the details of his schedule, mentioning a jeans advertisement, self-tanner, underwear, and cologne. I shoved everything else out of my mind and focused on him and his growing success. The demand for Cary Taylor was increasing by the day, and he was building a reputation with photographers and accounts for being both professional and prompt. I was thrilled for him and so proud. He'd come a long way and been through so much. It wasn't until after dinner that I noticed the two large gift boxes propped against the side of the sectional sofa. "What are those?"
"Those," Cary said, joining me in the living room, "are the ultimate."
I knew immediately they were from Stanton and my mom. Money was something my mother needed to be happy, and I was glad Stanton, husband number three, was able to fill that need for her, and all her many others as well. I often wished that could be the end of it, but my mom had a difficult time accepting that I didn't view money the same way she did. "What now?" He threw his arm around my shoulders, easy enough for him to do because he was taller by 5 inches.
"Don't be ungrateful. He loves your mom. He loves spoiling your mom, and your mom loves spoiling you. As much as you don't like it, he doesn't do it for you. He does it for her."
Sighing, I conceded his point.
"What are they?"
"Glam threads for the Advocacy Center's fundraiser dinner on Saturday, a bombshell dress for you, and a Brioni tux for me, because buying gifts for me is what he does for you. You're more tolerant if you have me around to listen to you bitch."
"Damn straight."
"Thank God he knows that."
"Of course he knows. Stanton wouldn't be a bazillionaire if he didn't know everything."
Cary caught my hand and tugged me over.
"Come on, take a look."
I pushed through the revolving door of the Crossfire into the lobby 10 minutes before 9 the next morning. Wanting to make the best impression on my first day, I'd gone with a simple sheath dress paired with black pumps that I slid on in replacement of my walking shoes on the elevator ride up. My blonde hair was twisted up in an artful chignon that resembled a figure eight, courtesy of Cary. I was hair inept, but he could create styles that were glamorous masterpieces. I wore the small pearl studs my dad had given me as a graduation gift, and the Rolex from Stanton and my mother. I had begun to think I'd put too much care into my appearance, but as I stepped into the lobby, I remembered being sprawled across the floor in my workout clothes, and I was grateful I didn't look anything like that graceless girl. The two security guards didn't seem to put two and two together when I flashed them my ID card on the way to the turnstiles. 20 floors later, I was exiting into the vestibule of Watersfield and Lehman. Before me was a wall of bulletproof glass that framed the double door entrance to the reception area. The receptionist at the crescent-shaped desk saw the badge I held up to the glass. She hit the button that unlocked the doors as I put my ID away. "Hi, Megumi." I greeted her when I stepped inside, admiring her cranberry-colored blouse. She was mixed race, a little bit Asian for sure, and very pretty. Her hair was dark and thick, and cut into a sleek bob that was shorter in the back and razor-sharp in the front. Her slow eyes were brown and warm, and her lips were full and naturally pink.
"Ava, hi! Mark's not in yet, but you know where you're going, right?"
"Absolutely." With a wave, I took the hallway to the left of the reception desk all the way to the end, where I made another left turn and ended up in a formerly open space now partitioned into cubicles. One was mine, and I went straight to it. I dropped my purse and the bag holding my walking flats into the bottom drawer of my utilitarian metal desk, then booted up my computer. I brought a couple of things to personalize my space, and I pulled them out. One was a frame collage of 3 photos, me and Cary on Coronado Beach, my mom and Stanton on his yacht in the French Riviera, and my dad on duty in his City of Oceanside, California, police cruiser. The other item was a colorful arrangement of glass flowers that Cary had given me just that morning as a first-day gift. I tucked it beside the small grouping of photos and sat back to take in the effect.
"Good morning, Ava."
I pushed to my feet to face my boss.
"Good morning, Mr. Garrity."
"Call me Mark, please."
"Come on over to my office."
I followed him across the strip of hallway, once again thinking that my new boss was very easy to look at with his gleaming dark skin, trim goatee, and laughing brown eyes. Mark had a square jaw and a charmingly crooked smile. He was trim and fit, and he carried himself with a confident poise that inspired trust and respect. He gestured at one of the two seats in front of his glass and chrome desk and waited until I sat to settle into his Aeron chair. Against the backdrop of sky and skyscrapers, Mark looked accomplished and powerful. He was, in fact, just a junior account manager, and his office was a closet compared to the ones occupied by the directors and executives. But no one could fault the view. He leaned back and smiled.
"Did you get settled into your new apartment?"
I was surprised he remembered, but I appreciated it, too. I'd met him during my second interview and liked him right away. "For the most part," I answered. "Still a few stray boxes here and there."
"You moved from San Diego, right? Nice city, but very different from New York. Do you miss the palm trees?"
"I miss the dry air. The humidity here is taking some getting used to."
"Wait till summer hits."
He smiled.
"So, it's your first day, and you're my first assistant. So we'll have to figure this out as we go. I'm not used to delegating, but I'm sure I'll pick it up quick."
I was instantly at ease. I'm eager to be delegated, too.
"Having you around is a big step up for me, Ava. I'd like you to be happy working here. Do you drink coffee?"
"Coffee is one of my major food groups."
"Ah, an assistant after my own heart."
His smile widened.
"I'm not going to ask you to fetch coffee for me, but I wouldn't mind if you helped me figure out how to use the new one-cup coffee brewers they just put in the break rooms."
I grinned. "No problem."
"How sad is it that I don't have anything else for you?"
He rubbed the back of his neck, sheepishly.
"Why don't I show you the accounts I'm working on, and we'll go from there."
The rest of the day passed in a blur. Mark touched bases with two clients and had a long meeting with a creative team working on concept ideas for a trade school. It was a fascinating process, seeing firsthand how the various departments picked up the baton from each other to carry a campaign from proposition to fruition. I might have stayed late just to get a better feel of the layout of the offices, but my phone rang at 5:10.
"Mark Garrity's office, Ava Trammell speaking."
"Get your ass home so we can go out for the drink you rain-checked on yesterday."
Carrie's mock sternness made me smile.
All right, I'm coming."
Shutting down my computer, I cleared out. When I reached the bank of elevators, I pulled out my cell to text a quick, "on my way" note to Carrie. A ding alerted me to which car was stopping on my floor, and I moved over to stand in front of it, briefly returning my attention to hitting the send button. When the doors opened, I took a step forward. I glanced up to watch where I was going, and blue eyes met mine. My breath caught. The sex god was the lone occupant. Chapter 2. His tie was silver, and his shirt brilliantly white, the stark absence of color emphasizing those amazing blue irises. As he stood there with his jacket open and his hands shoved casually into his pants pockets, the sight of him was like running smack into a wall I hadn't known was there. I jerked to a halt, my gaze riveted to the man who was even more striking than I'd remembered. I had never seen hair that purely black. It was glossy and slightly long, the ends drifting over his collar. That sexy length was the crowning touch of bad boy allure over the successful businessman, like whipped cream topping on a hot fudge brownie sundae. As my mother would say, only rogues and raiders had hair like that. My hands clenched against the urge to touch it, to see if it felt like the rich silk it resembled. The doors began to close. He took an easy step forward and pressed a button on the panel to hold them open.
"There's plenty of room for us both, Ava."
The sound of that smoky, implacable voice broke me out of my momentary daze. How did he know my name? Then I remembered that he'd picked up my ID card when I'd dropped it in the lobby. For a second, I debated telling him I was waiting for someone so I could take another car down, but my brain lurched back into action. What the hell was wrong with me? Clearly he worked in the crossfire. I couldn't avoid him every time I saw him, and why should I? If I wanted to get to the point where I could look at him and take his hotness for granted, I needed to see him often enough that he became like furniture. If only. I stepped into the car. Thank you. He released the button and stepped back again. The doors closed, and the elevator began its descent. I immediately regretted my decision to share the car with him. Awareness of him prickled across my skin. He was a potent force in such a small enclosure, radiating a palpable energy and sexual magnetism that had me shifting restlessly on my feet. My breathing became as ragged as my heartbeat. I felt that inexplicable pull to him again, as if he exuded a silent demand that I was instinctively attuned to answering.
"Enjoy your first day?"
he asked, startling me. His voice resonated, flowing over me in a seductive rhythm. How the hell did he know it was my first day? "Yes, actually," I answered evenly. "How was yours?" I felt his gaze slide over my profile, but I kept my attention trained on the brushed aluminum elevator doors. My heart was racing in my chest, my stomach quivering madly. I felt jumbled and off my game.
"Well, it wasn't my first," he replied with a hint of amusement. "But it was successful, and getting better as it progresses."
I nodded and managed a smile, having no idea what that was supposed to mean. The car slowed on the 12th floor, and a friendly group of three got on, talking excitedly among themselves. I stepped back to make room for them, retreating into the opposite corner of the elevator from dark and dangerous. Except he sidestepped along with me. We were suddenly closer than we'd been before. He adjusted his perfectly knotted tie, his arm brushing against mine as he did so. I sucked in a deep breath, trying to ignore my acute awareness of him by concentrating on the conversation taking place in front of us. It was impossible. He was just so there, right there, all perfect and gorgeous and smelling divine. My thoughts ran away from me, fantasizing about how hard his body might be beneath the suit, how it might feel against me, how well endowed, or not, he might be. When the car reached the lobby, I almost moaned in relief. I waited impatiently as the elevator emptied, and the first chance I got, I took a step forward. His hand settled firmly at the small of my back, and he walked out beside me, steering me. The sensation of his touch on such a vulnerable place rippled through me. We reached the turnstiles, and his hand fell away, leaving me feeling oddly bereft. I glanced at him, trying to read him, but although he was looking at me, his face gave nothing away.
"Ava!"
The sight of Carrie lounging casually against a marble column in the lobby shifted everything. He was wearing jeans that showcased his mile-long legs and an oversized sweater in soft green that emphasized his eyes. He easily drew the attention of everyone in the lobby. I slowed as I approached him, and the sex god passed us, moving through the revolving door and sliding fluidly into the back of the chauffeured black Bentley SUV I'd seen at the curb the evening before. Carrie whistled as the car pulled away.
"Well, well, from the way you were looking at him, that was the guy you told me about, right?"
"Oh, yeah. That was definitely him."
"You work together?"
Linking arms with me, Carrie tugged me out to the street through the stationary door. "No." I stopped on the sidewalk to change into my walking flats, leaning into him as pedestrians flowed around us.
I don't know who he is, but he asked me if I'd had a good first day, so I better figure it out.
Well,
he grinned and supported my elbow as I hopped awkwardly from one foot to the other.
No idea how anyone could get any work done around him. My brain sort of fried for a minute.
I'm sure that's a universal effect. I straightened.
Let's go. I need a drink.
The next morning arrived with a slight throbbing at the back of my skull that mocked me for having one too many glasses of wine. Still, as I rode the elevator up to the 20th floor, I didn't regret the hangover as much as I should have. My choices were either too much alcohol or a whirl with my vibrator, and I was damned if I'd have a battery-provided orgasm starring Dark and Dangerous. Not that he'd know or even care that he made me so horny I couldn't see straight, but I'd know, and I didn't want to give the fantasy of him the satisfaction. I dropped my stuff in the bottom drawer of my desk, and when I saw that Mark wasn't in yet, I grabbed a cup of coffee and returned to my cubicle to catch up on my new favorite ad biz blogs.
Ava!
I jumped when he appeared beside me, his grin a flash of white against his smooth, dark skin. Good morning, Mark.
Is it ever? You're my lucky charm, I think. Come into my office. Bring your tablet. Can you work late tonight?
I followed him over, catching on to his excitement.
Sure.
I had hoped you'd say that. He sank into his chair. I took the one I'd said in the day before and quickly opened a notepad program.
So, he began, we've received an RFP for Kingsman Vodka, and they mentioned me by name. First time that's ever happened.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that, but let's save them for when we've actually landed the account. We'll still have to bid if we get past the request for proposal stage, and they want to meet with me tomorrow evening.
Wow. Is that timeline usual?
No. Usually, they'd wait until we had the RFP finished before meeting with us. But Cross Industries recently acquired Kingsman, and CI has dozens of subsidiaries. That's good business, if we can get it. They know it, and they're making us jump through hoops, the first of which is meeting with me.
Usually, there would be a team, right?
Yes, we'd present as a group, but they're familiar with the drill. They know they'll get the pitch from a senior executive, then end up working with a junior like me. So they picked me out, and now they want to vet me. But to be fair, the RFP provides a lot more information than it asks for in return. It's as good as a brief, so I really can't accuse them of being unreasonably demanding, just meticulous. Par for the course when dealing with Cross Industries.
He ran a hand over his tight curls, betraying the pressure he felt.
What do you think of Kingsman Vodka?
Well, honestly, I've never heard of it.
Mark fell back in his chair and laughed. Thank God. I thought I was the only one. Well, the plus side is there's no bad press to get over. No news can be good news.
What can I do to help, besides research vodka and stay late?
His lips pursed a moment as he thought about it.
Jot this down. We worked straight through lunch and long after the office had emptied, going over some initial data from the strategists. It was a little after 7 when Mark's smartphone rang, startling me with its abrupt intrusion into the quiet. Mark activated the speaker and kept working.
Hey, baby. Have you fed that poor girl yet?
Demanded a warm, masculine voice over the line. Glancing at me through his glass office wall, Mark said,
I forgot.
I looked away quickly, biting my lower lip to hide my smile. A snort came clearly across the line.
Only 2 days on the job, and you're already overworking her and starving her to death. She's going to quit.
Shit. You're right. Steve, honey,
don't Steve, honey, me. Does she like Chinese?
I gave Mark the thumbs up. He grinned.
Yes, she does. All right, I'll be there in 20. Let security know I'm coming.
Almost exactly 20 minutes later, I buzzed Stephen Ellison through the waiting area doors. He was a juggernaut of a fellow, dressed in dark jeans, scuffed work boots, and a neatly pressed button-down shirt. Red-haired with laughing blue eyes, he was as good-looking as his partner was, just in a very different way. The three of us sat around Mark's desk and dumped Kung Pao chicken and broccoli beef onto paper plates, added helpings of sticky white rice, and then dug in with chopsticks. I discovered that Stephen was a contractor and that he and Mark had been a couple since college. I watched them interact and felt awe and a dash of envy. Their relationship was so beautifully functional that it was a joy to spend time with them.
"Damn, girl," Stephen said with a whistle, as I went for a third helping. "You can put it away. Where does it go?"
I shrugged. "To the gym with me. Maybe that helps."
"Don't mind him," Mark said, grinning. "Stephen's just jealous. He has to watch his girlish figure."
"Hell."
Stephen shot his partner a wry look.
"I might have to take her out to lunch with the crew. I could win money betting on how much she can eat."
I smiled. "That could be fun."
"Ah, I knew you had a bit of a wild streak. It's in your smile."
Looking down at my food, I refused to let my mind wander into memories of just how wild I'd been in my rebellious, self-destructive phase. Mark saved me.
"Don't harass my assistant.
And what do you know about wild women anyway?"
"I know some of them like hanging out with gay men. They like our perspective."
His grin flashed.
"I know a few other things, too." "Hey, don't look so shocked, you two. I wanted to see if heterosex lived up to the hype."
Clearly, this was news to Mark. But from the twitching of his lips, he was secure enough in their relationship to find the whole exchange amusing.
"Oh?
How'd that work out for you?" I asked bravely. Stephen shrugged.
"I don't want to say it's overrated, because clearly I'm the wrong demographic, and I had a very limited sampling. But I can do without."
I thought it was very telling that Stephen could relate his story in terms Mark worked with. They shared their careers with each other and listened, even though their chosen fields were miles apart.
"Considering your present living arrangement," Mark said to him,
catching up a stem of broccoli with his chopsticks,
"I'd say that's a very good thing."
By the time we finished eating, it was 8, and the cleaning crew had arrived. Mark insisted on calling me a cab. "Should I come in early tomorrow?" I asked. Stephen bumped shoulders with Mark.
"You must have done something good in a past life to score this one."
"I think putting up with you in this life qualifies," Mark said dryly.
"Hey," Stephen protested. "I'm housebroken. I put the toilet seat down."
Mark shot me an exasperated look that was warm with affection for his partner.
"And that's helpful how?"
Mark and I scrambled all day Thursday to get ready for his 4 o'clock with the team from Kingsman. We grabbed an information-packed lunch with the two creatives who would be participating in the pitch when it got to that point in the process. Then we went over the notes on Kingsman's web presence and existing social media outreach. I got a little nervous when 3:30 rolled around because I knew traffic would be a bitch, but Mark kept working after I pointed out the time. It was 3:45 before he bounded out of his office with a broad smile, still shrugging into his jacket.
"Join me, Ava."
I blinked up at him from my desk. "Really?"
"Hey, you worked hard on helping me prep. Don't you want to see how it goes?"
"Yes, absolutely." I pushed to my feet, knowing my appearance would be a reflection on my boss. I smoothed my black pencil skirt and straightened the cuffs of my long-sleeved silk blouse. By a random twist of fate, my crimson shirt perfectly matched Mark's tie. "Thank you." We headed out to the elevators, and I was briefly startled when the car went up instead of down. When we reached the top floor, the waiting area we stepped into was considerably larger and more ornate than the one on the 20th. Hanging baskets of ferns and lilies fragranced the air, and a smoky glass security entrance was sandblasted with Cross Industries in a bold, masculine font. We were buzzed in, and then asked to wait a moment. Both of us declined an offer of water or coffee, and less than 5 minutes after we arrived, we were directed to a closed conference room. Mark looked at me with twinkling eyes as the receptionist reached for the door handle.
Ready?
I smiled. Ready. The door opened, and I was gestured in first. I made sure to smile brightly as I stepped inside, a smile that froze on my face at the sight of the man rising to his feet at my entrance. My abrupt stop bottlenecked the threshold, and Mark ran into my back, sending me stumbling forward. Dark and Dangerous caught me by the waist, hauling me off my feet and directly into his chest. The air left my lungs in a rush, followed immediately by every bit of common sense I possessed. Even through the layers of clothing between us, his biceps were like stone beneath my palms, his stomach a hard slab of muscle against my own. When he sucked in a sharp breath, my nipples tightened, stimulated by the expansion of his chest. Oh no. I was cursed. A rapid-fire series of images flashed through my mind, showcasing a thousand ways I could stumble, fall, trip, skid, or crash in front of the sex god over the days, weeks, and months ahead.
"Hello again,"
he murmured, the vibration of his voice making me ache all over.
"Always a pleasure running into you, Ava."
I flushed with embarrassment and desire, unable to find the will to push away despite the two other people in the room with him. It didn't help that his attention was solely on me, his hard body radiating that arresting impression of powerful demand.
"Mr. Cross," Mark said behind me, "sorry about the entrance."
"Don't be. It was a memorable one."
I wobbled on my stilettos when Cross set me down, my knees weakened from the full body contact. He was dressed in black again, with both his shirt and tie in a soft gray. As always, he looked too good. What would it be like to be that amazing looking? There was no way he could go anywhere without causing a disturbance. Reaching out, Mark steadied me and eased me back gently. Cross's gaze stayed focused on Mark's hand at my elbow until I was released.
"Right. Okay, then." Mark pulled himself together. "This is my assistant, Ava Trammell."
"We've met."
Cross pulled out the chair next to his.
"Ava?"
I looked to Mark for guidance, still recovering from the moments I'd spent plastered against the sexual superconductor in Fioravante. Cross leaned closer and ordered quietly.
"Sit, Ava."
Mark gave a brief nod, but I was already lowering into the chair at Cross's command, my body obeying instinctively before my mind caught up and objected. I tried not to fidget for the next hour as Mark was grilled by Cross and the two Kingsman directors, both of whom were attractive brunettes in elegant pantsuits. The one in Raspberry was especially enthusiastic about garnering Cross's attention, while the one in Cream focused intently on my boss. All three seemed impressed by Mark's ability to articulate how the agencies work, and his facilitation of it with the client created provable value for the client's brand. I admired how cool Mark remained under pressure exerted by Cross, who easily dominated the meeting.
"Well done, Mr. Garrity,"
Cross praised lightly as they wrapped things up.
"I look forward to going over the RFP when the time comes. What would entice you to try Kingsman, Ava?"
Startled, I blinked. "Excuse me?" The intensity of his gaze was searing. It felt as if his entire focus were on me, which only reinforced my respect for Mark, who'd had to work under the weight of that stare for an hour. Cross's chair was set perpendicular to the length of the table, facing me head-on. His right arm rested on the smooth wooden surface, his long, elegant fingers stroking rhythmically along the top. I caught a glimpse of his wrist at the end of his cuff, and for some crazy reason the sight of that small expanse of golden skin with its light dusting of dark hair made my clit throb for attention. He was just so male.
"Which of Mark's suggested concepts do you prefer?" he asked again.
"I think they're all brilliant." His beautiful face was impassive when he said,
"I'll clear the room to get your honest opinion, if that's what it takes."
My fingers curled around the ends of my chair's armrests. "I just gave you my honest opinion, Mr. Cross, but if you must know, I think sexy luxury on a budget will appeal to the largest demographic. But I lack..."
"I agree."
Cross stood and buttoned his jacket.
"You have a direction, Mr. Garrity. We'll revisit next week."
I sat for a moment, stunned by the breakneck pace of events. Then I looked at Mark, who seemed to be wavering between astonished joy and bewilderment. Rising to my feet, I led the way to the door. I was hyper-aware of Cross walking beside me. The way he moved with animal grace and arrogant economy was a major turn-on. I couldn't imagine him not fucking well and being aggressive about it, taking what he wanted in a way that made a woman wild to give it to him. Cross stayed with me all the way to the bank of elevators. He said a few things to Mark about sports, I think, but I was too focused on the way I was reacting to him to care about the small talk. When the car arrived, I breathed a sigh of relief and hastily stepped forward with Mark.
"A moment, Ava," Cross said smoothly,
holding me back with a hand at my elbow.
"She'll be right down," he told Mark, as the elevator doors closed on my boss's astonished face.
Cross said nothing until the car was on its way down. Then he pushed the call button again and asked,
"Are you sleeping with anyone?"
The question was asked so casually, it took a second to process what he'd said. I inhaled sharply. "Why is that any business of yours?" He looked at me, and I saw what I'd seen the first time we'd met. Tremendous power and steely control, both of which had me taking an involuntary step back. Again. At least I didn't fall this time. I was making progress.
"Because I want to fuck you, Ava. I need to know what's standing in my way, if anything."
The sudden ache between my thighs had me reaching for the wall to maintain my balance. He reached out to steady me, but I held him at bay with an uplifted hand. "Maybe I'm just not interested, Mr. Cross." A ghost of a smile touched his lips and made him impossibly more handsome.
Dear God.
The ding that signaled the approaching elevator made me jump. I was strung so tight. I'd never been so aroused, never been so scorchingly attracted to another human being, never been so offended by a person I lusted after. I stepped into the elevator and faced him. He smiled.
"Until next time, Ava."
The doors closed, and I sagged into the brass handrail, trying to regain my bearings. I'd barely pulled myself together when the doors opened and revealed Mark pacing in the waiting area on our floor.
"Jesus, Ava," Mark muttered, coming to an abrupt halt. "What the hell was that?"
"I have no freaking clue," I exhaled in a rush, wishing I could share the confusing, irritating exchange I'd had with Cross, but well aware that my boss wasn't the appropriate outlet.
"Who cares? You know he's going to give you the account."
A grin chased away his frown.
"I'm thinking he might."
"As my roommate always says, you should celebrate. Should I make dinner reservations for you and Stephen?"
"Why not? Pure food and wine at 7, if they can squeeze us in. If not, surprise us."
We'd barely returned to Mark's office when he was pounced on by the executives. Michael Waters, the CEO and president, and Christine Field, and Walter Lehman, the executive chairman and vice chairman. I skirted the four of them as quietly as possible and slid into my cubicle. I called Pure Food and Wine and begged for a table for two. After some serious groveling and pleading, the hostess finally caved. I left a message on Mark's voicemail.
It's definitely your lucky day. You're booked for dinner at 7. Have fun.
Then I clocked out, eager to get home.
He said what?
Carrie sat on the opposite end of our white sectional sofa and shook his head.
I know, right? I enjoyed